All right, Philippians.
I do not have it.
Let me grab the pen.
Okay, so I have marked off that we are in verse 27. So who would like to read 27 to the end of the chapter? Chapter 1, sorry. We are almost one-fourth of the way done. Go ahead, Alan.
Only let your conduct be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of your affairs as you stand fast in one spirit, one mind striving together for the faith of the gospel. And not in any way terrified by your adversaries, which is to them a fruit of perdition, but to you of salvation and heaven from God. For to you it has been granted on behalf of Christ, not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for his sake, having the same conflict which you saw in me and now here is in me.
Okay, thank you. All right, so this is a concept that Paul will deal with much later in the book. Probably not till chapter 3, but he kind of hints at here early. This little section, he is often translated as, what's the word I'm looking for? Only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel. Or basically, he's saying, as what he's going to say in chapter 3, behave as citizens should. So he's kind of using a little bit of a play on words here. So here they have everybody really in this room and in the church in Philippi, they kind of have a dual citizenship. We're citizens of our nation. But as brothers and sisters, we also are citizens in Christ. And so this is something that Paul is going to say. Since you are citizens in Christ, you need to be living a life that is worthy of who Christ is. That's funny. So I told you I'm really excited about my lesson today, and this would have been a very good passage to use in my lesson, but I didn't even think of this one. It's funny how that stuff kind of works out, doesn't it? And so he's saying, what is this worthiness that he's talking about? What does it mean to be, I think this is a good discussion for us, what does it mean for us to be worthy of the gospel? So is that tit for tat?
Mm.
No, well, that's not what I was really saying there, but that's how I would describe it. I was kind of playing devil's advocate for a second. Yeah, and this is true. We live our life because we live our lives in this way because of how Christ talks about in Corinthians, 2 Corinthians. If anyone was in Christ, he's a new creation. And I think that's what he means by living that life that's worthy of being in Christ. It's because you are now a part of Christ, and you have been made new by Christ, and so you have this expectation that now that you're in this new body, you have to live up to that expectation. Yes. Oh, well, that answer is very easy. The answer is no. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily the question here. Yes, I agree with you. We're not worthy of the gift, but this is after you've been given the gift, that you're living your life that is worthy of what Christ calls you to be. And Paul kind of touches up on that subject in Romans chapter 6, where he says, okay, well, you've been given the gift, but should you go on sinning? No. So I think what Paul is, at the very least, Paul is probably calling them to do the most basic things that they can do, and that is just to stop sinning. All right. Now, we may argue over what this is, and we certainly do, but I think Paul is basically saying, hey, you've got this citizenship in Christ. All right, so you're all citizens of the United States, I'm assuming, right? All right. Is there anybody here who goes around breaking laws? Okay, that's a good one. Okay, jaywalking, that's probably another one a lot of people would break. No, you can really get there. You can get ticketed. Yeah. You've never been pulled over for speeding, Mark? Let me ask you, you're a pilot. I'm assuming there's a ton of laws when it comes to flying, right?
Not as many as there are.
Really? Okay. I'm sorry, I don't know your name.
Steve?
Steve? Mm-hmm. Yes, it's an uphill journey. It's not a battle, it's a journey.
Sinner and to endure such hostility of sinners against himself. as a holiness to strive against, or the worthiness to strive against.
I agree. Your walk in your faith should always be moving forward, right? Hopefully, but your life is often like a roller coaster. It has its ups, it has its downs. Sometimes it's easier to move forward. Sometimes it's more difficult. And so I think that's one of the things that Paul is trying to make clear here is that even at the worst times of your life, or at the difficult times of your life, because we know this is an issue that he's going to address between the two women, is that they should striving to maintain their citizenship in the gospel. Which is why he moves on from this point to the next point, that you're standing firm in one spirit with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel. So everything should be working towards, it should be working together, that we should be working together as citizens do. Do you remember a few weeks ago when I talked about contractualism? Does anybody remember this word? Yes. It was a word I used. It's basically, what do you owe each other? So what do you owe each other as citizens in the gospel? Huh? Love, support, unity. Probably some others that are not coming to my head right at this second. The fruits of the Spirit. Do we do that? I think we try to do that. Are we successful? Not all the time. I mean, we are still imperfect beings. And I know even Paul struggled with this. We saw that Paul was often argumentative. And maybe Paul was right some of the times, but it doesn't necessarily mean he got along. And Paul recognizes his own previous sins, especially the ones that he had before he became a Christian, as being a hindrance to the church. I think Paul is very appreciative at this point, because we read about the Bible as events that happens, and Mark uses the word immediately a lot, not you, the Gospel of Mark. And so when we think of the Bible, we think of these events happening then. But when we read about Paul's conversion, and it talks about Ananias, is that one who helped Paul convert? Yeah, okay. Even Ananias was afraid to do that because he knew who Paul was. And it probably took a long time for Paul to overcome that stereotype, or not that stereotype, but his label or his reputation. Thank you. He did think he was right. Mm-hmm. Sorry? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he also recognized, well, he had a little bit of help, that he was wrong. And then he needed the support of the community that he persecuted to move forward. And that was probably really difficult for him, but I imagine it was also really difficult for the community as well. There's a term for this change. It's called a paradigm shift. It's like a complete change in the situation. Almost a 180. And When I was in school, we talked about this, and my teacher told me that most people will probably only go through 3 or 4 of these in their whole lives. And he said that they're so disruptive that you might even be a completely different person on the other side of it. And so I imagine Paul going through this shift was a constant struggle for most of his life, for not most of his life, but a good portion of his life. Because he had to know what he did. And I know personally, I have a hard time forgiving myself for minor things. There's a good point. There's a good chance that Paul actually probably killed people. It doesn't actually say it that he does, but it said that it was in his heart. Mm-hmm. It does say it? Chapter 7 says he had murderous threats, or murderous breath. Stephen, who was approved. Yes. But I was talking more about chapter 7 than chapter 6. So this unity to us, as we look at each other, and we see each other's flaws. I'm not talking necessarily about the physical flaws. But the ones that we see, the character flaws, they go and have alcohol, or they don't donate enough money in the play. I'm just making stuff up. I'm not accusing anybody of anything. And what Paul is saying here is, okay, those might be problems, but how are you dealing with it? How is this progressing your faith? So we have two sisters fighting. We don't know what they're necessarily fighting about. How is their faith being progressed? Because it's probably not in their arguments. So do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourself. A very important line from what we're going to see in chapter 2. Humility is the theme of chapter 2. And again, this is, I think, Paul speaking from experience, because it probably took a lot of humility for him to do this. Has anybody ever been in a situation where you had to be extremely humble, even though you knew you were right? You want to share? Okay. All right, I'm going to share a story, because this situation happened to me when I was in China. I might have already shared this story before, I don't know. We have this guy who was a missionary in China like us. He was about 6-7 years older than me. He came from a very, very conservative background. But he was still doing work like we were doing. In China, you want to keep it small because you don't want to get noticed. And so his church was doing their thing, and our church, I don't want to say his and ours, but you get the idea, was doing our thing. And so one day we thought, well, why don't we all get together at least once, and we'll worship together. And we all thought this was a great idea, and so we did what we normally do, and afterwards we were discussing, and he and my wife were having a discussion about something. I don't remember what it was. It had nothing to do with church at all. The next day, I thought the argument was over. It wasn't even really an argument. It was a discussion. The next day, he went to my wife's class, in the middle of her class, while she was teaching, and yelled at her for disagreeing with him and not respecting him, and in front of all of her students, and said some very nasty things to her. And so she called me, crying, and I was so angry. I was going to go right over to his home, and I was going to march, and I was going to confront him in a lot of anger about what he just did to my wife. And luckily for me, and probably for him, he wasn't home. And I called the person who had placed both of us in that city and told him that this was an issue. And he's like, okay, I'll do what I can to take care of it. And for a while, we just avoided him. And we thought that was the best thing to do. And then a few weeks later, our church from America came up, and one of the elders from the church came up, and he told us, we were told about the situation. He gave me the best and worst piece of advice I have ever heard. And I say that because it's an opinion, not because it's a fact. He said that you need to go and apologize to him. And he says, I understand that you did absolutely nothing wrong. But I also understand that you are here for a purpose. You are here to share the gospel. And what this is going to do is that this is going to become a hindrance. And he's like, if that is your focus, that is what you need to move towards. And so though you probably did nothing wrong, the only way that you're going to continue to do the work that you're doing without it becoming a problem is to settle it in his mind. And so I did. I went over there and I had a 3-hour conversation with this guy, basically apologizing on behalf of my family for something that we didn't even do. And we never had a single problem again. But those 3 hours were the most humbling experience of my life. And I did it to make sure that it did not become a problem for the work that I was doing. And after a while, I started to think that the whole thing really just didn't matter. I mean, my anger towards him was my desire to protect my wife. But I could have just let the whole thing go and it wouldn't have become a problem at all. But I wanted to make it something. And I think that's a lot of our problems, the selfishness of trying to make it into something more. Feeling like that we have to be vindicated. Anyway, that's my story. Steve. Do you prefer Steve? Okay. Me too. And sometimes that's all you can do is if they don't accept it. Yeah, for Paul, it came back to this issue of how is your faith in the gospel going to be bettered by your situation? And so Paul's in prison because he was causing a scene. That was probably the most common reason Paul was in prison, because he was causing a scene. And for him, that was necessary to advance the gospel. But for me, it called for humility. even though I had no reason to be in that situation, because it's by nothing that I caused. Yes. Hi, Connie.
That exactly, to me, is the meaning of only like the conduct be worthy of the gospel of Christ. Christ did humble himself when it wasn't necessary to be.
Mm-hmm.
But he did that for us. Well, oftentimes, our want is to put ourselves in a situation where we have.
Mm-hmm. And that's the point that Paul is going to be getting to in the next chapter. So, but yes, I agree. George.
You always, remember the old adage that they take excuse for the quarrel?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think the answer to that question was, actually, it's different. All too often, you said yes. Kind of just goes from there, right? And I think that in
this case, Paul wants to question that. Doesn't it end the gospel? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Do you choose to be offended? I mean, what's your attitude about it? Now, we do have an obligation. Sorry, Mark. I can tell you've got you make the most interesting faces when I must be here. I do agree that we have a responsibility to confront people when they've done something wrong. But a lot that is intended to be from a point of building the brother up, not vindicating yourself. Mark. Pride is an outward emotion, or not an outward emotion, a selfish emotion. And I think Paul kind of hints at that here. In fact, I can't imagine pride being anything else but selfish. Yeah. We got a few more seconds. I don't really want to start chapter 2 yet, since we're at the very, very end. There was a park in the last town I lived in. It was called Pride Park. And we were told, never go there. And we're like, why don't you go there? And he goes, because that's where all the bad stuff happens.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, so there's a lot of pride there. So I think that there are things to be proud in. But I think having pride in general are the kind of things that gets us in trouble. As a general statement. Yes, Connie.
We had a guest preacher one time, and he said something that I've been really stuck with. He said,
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think that's a very interesting point.
We're not going to get there. We can come back to 28.
If you want.
Well, you know, Mark, you
know. Sure, Mark. I was going to start with chapter 2s, but if you want to start, if you want to come back to chapter 20 in the context of chapter 2 next week, we can do that. Okay. All right, let's say a closing prayer really quick.